Right, we're all right now.
So when did you do the first trail?
You hold the map, and then
I'll hold the map.
When did I do the first trail about?
I suppose it would have been in the mid-1960s.
Wow.
No, mid-70s, sorry, when we first bought the property in 74. Good, you've got that.
And you've cut all of these trails yourself? And
yes, all done by hand, with no mechanical. It's all done by, with hand tools, all done by hand, in other words.
And you've moved all these boulders that
yes,
we're walking over?
Yes, there's an unassorted lot of rocks with a slippery sheet of solid rock underneath. So I brought all these in to make a path down. And then I brought soil from that mine up there. You'll see them, it's all low down there. And put it in barrows and brought it down here to make a track. So it didn't start right now.
Is there a lot of work in maintaining the trails?
Oh.
I guess that's a yes.
When I had my workshop, the CALM people, the Conservation and Land Management people, they just said, you didn't do all this yourself. Impossible. And they have squads of people and they make all these tracks with machines and things, and they're all flat. This is all done by hand. You get all the contours. When you, certain things that you do by hand are very beautiful. That's Snotty Gobble. It's a member of the Proteaceae, Snotty Gobble.
So those are flowers?
Yes, it's flowers, and its fruits have a little fruit on it. Here's a fruit. I'll try to explain to Amanda what Snotty Gobble is. There's the fruit.
Oh.
Now, it has on that end of the fruit usually a piece of resin. A gobble is a nose, and snot is the liquid that comes out of your nose.
That's why it's called
snotty. Snotty gobble.
I never knew.
And then it has wonderful bark here, which is paper bark. It's all in layers. And when the fire comes through, it's resistant to fire because it just flakes off. And so that one's, the she-oak is a tree which is resistant to fire, a thick bark. Oh. So here is where a fire has gone up it, but it hasn't killed it. It's just, see the...
How often does this forest need fire to be healthy, do you think? Or I guess it never has to have fire.
Depends on what tree you're thinking of. Lots of trees will be perfectly happy without fire.
Yeah.
Other ones need an ash bed to regenerate, and Carrie needs an ash bed to regenerate, which I will show you.
But these things could live for hundreds more years without
needing
to regenerate.
Now, there's certain parts of the forest which have never been logged, just near here, where the trees are absolutely enormous, right?
And they were last burnt in 1937.
37, wow.
But this had a fire through it in 1950, which is what of the fire scars you see on the trunks now. You see the fire scar there? There's another scar, a fire lick, like a fire lick leaked up there in 1950, and it's all pretty well repaired itself, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, it's fine. But I guess there's little spiders that live in moist, shaded places that never need fire. They prefer to have no fire ever.
Yes, certain things, yes. The fire has a lot of rejuvenating because it recycles all the nutrients. But too frequent fires are a disaster.
Too frequent would be more than 5 years, do you think?
Oh, yes. Well, CALM used to say they burnt one side of the road 1 year and then the next side of the road 5 years later. So, I mean, they were burning far too frequently.
Right.
But they want to create a regime where there isn't any danger to wild to humans.
Yeah, so they weren't thinking about biodiversity as number one priority.
No, so they kill a lot of species which need... If a species is killed by fire, comes back from seed, and doesn't start reproducing for 5 years, if there's a fire before that, kaput.
species is locally extinct.
Yeah, extinct. So there's a lot of species that become extinct because of that, but not very many.
No.
And I think public opinion is very much, having seen the Ash Wednesday fires and so on, it's been very much more swayed towards controlled burning rather than waiting for a holocaust, which we'd get here. I mean, if this was a lightning strike in here in hot, dry weather, and the whole lot of this forest would go up. There's no way really that I can do a controlled burn in here, and I don't want to. I'd rather let it happen, and then nature will come back a bit.
Yeah, sure.
And as long as humans are not at risk, why worry, you know?
Definitely.
Sometimes I use the roots as steps.
They're probably pretty good. Self-renewing structure. And what's your attitude to introduced species, like kookaburras?
Well, I don't like them because they eat all my lizards, so I tend to shoot them if they're in the garden. They are pests.
Yeah.
I don't shoot anything unless I really have to, but if one is being eating my...
I think a lot of the tourists who come here think that they're a local bird.
Well, there was evidence that they were in West Australia in fossil times, but not... They disappeared when it became real dry, I don't know. That's the story. And they were introduced in 1920 in Perth Zoo, and then they escaped. And within 10 years, they were all over Western Australia.
Mm.
So a native animal can be a pest. The same as a native plant can be a pest.
Mm.
Probably the worst one, because all of the lizards are not adapted to looking up in the sky for a kookaburra.
Right.
And the kookaburra pounces on them. But it's a lovely bird. And I'm sorry about this.
So what are some of the most common birds in the canopy of the Karri Forest?
New Holland honeyeater probably is the commonest bird, which is a little black and white and yellow honeyeater.
Because I was seeing plenty of silver eyes the other day when I was...
Yes, they're common, but the silver eyes are nomadic species, but the honeyeaters are resident in the forest.
Seems funny to a lot of people, I think, that the Karri Forest is less diverse in plants and animals than some of the drier Quangan areas of Western Australia.
Well, generally speaking, once you have trees in anything, in other words, once you have a forest, this is a forest ecosystem, the understory is usually very poor because there's only a few species that can live in the very dry, poor soil that the trees have created. And if you go out on the sand plain, like go up to Eneabba or Badgingarra, you know, those sort of places, they're all plants are the same, none of them very tall, and there you get amazing biodiversity. The soil is poor, but there's nobody seems to exert dominance.
But then again, in the Daintree rainforest, there's 600 species of tree.
Oh, yes, that's true, but in these... Rice chlorophyll forest, it's usually nothing more than two or maybe up to a handful of tree species. There's trees and then there's mid-story species like the casuarinas. The only two trees are Karri, Marri, and a bit of Jarrah, which you'll see.
Where is the Marri?
The Marri is the smooth... the Marri is this one, yes.
This one?
The red gum. This one, no, this one here.
This one.
And see the gum coming out of it? That one, the next one to it? That's what's called red gum. And the loggers weren't interested in it, so they only harvested the...
That's the one that's bleeding.
That's why I often seem to see some really majestic Marri trees here and there, in areas where you'd normally have seen Jarrah of the same age, but they were prized more.
The Jarrah was taken out. Or the Karri was taken out and the Marris were left. So there is a Marri that was left by the loggers. And you can always tell that it's got that knobbly trunk
It survives fire, it's got the black scars on it, and it's very old. It was originally the understory to carry. The carry trees would have been at least twice that size. And once you cut down the carries, the marys didn't like it with their heads up in the sun, so the marys are very sick generally in this property.
So do you feel like the king in his kingdom with your whole wild ecosystem here, or a steward, or passerby, or
purely a stewardship? Ownership means nothing to me. I have things like a car and so on, which are objects that I use.
So do you recommend to everybody, John, that they learn more about plants and plant species identification to appreciate the forest more?
Well, yes.
Rather than seeing a green mass, I suppose.
People do come in here for different reasons.
Yeah.
It is aesthetically very pleasing. So there is a beauty quality to that. It's a very calming environment because we are very calm. Very few animals have colour consciousness as we have, and so mostly just see in black and white. But humans saw, see in thick and red, and they think that that evolved when apes, monkeys that were the forerunners of humans, if you believe in evolution and all that, were able to discriminate colours of fruits, which was biologically advantageous, because they would see the ripe fruits were red and the unripe ones were green.
So you rake the trails three times a year?
Well, raking has to be done 3 times a year. That for me is a week's work. A week.
One whole solid week of raking.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm telling you, you're very dedicated and fit. I've had people have come and made up about it. This is the tea tree swamp here.
You have no trees in here, it's too wet.
Yeah.
And these are all members of the eucalypt family, Myrtaceae, tea tree. And these are sedges. Sedge, it's a family Cyperaceae. Mm. Not many grasses. They replace grasses.
Grasses are not common in Australia compared to England.
Don't you think the Aboriginal burning practices may have made them more common?
The forestry policy up north has essentially controlled what were forest, and they've now become grassland. But I don't think that would be the case down here. They didn't do much burning down here.
No, not in the Karri Forest. Yeah.
And they did.
But maybe around Perth.
Very few Aboriginals in the Karri Forest, in fact.
Yeah.
They couldn't make a living here. There wasn't enough to eat.
Well, there's...
You can't hunt game. If you're in that, you can't catch a kangaroo in that. It hears you and it's off.
Yeah.
So they...
Yes.
Lived on shellfish and fish along the shore. And eating a lot of native plants. And there are not very many edible things in the Karri Forest. I wouldn't like to be left here with no food, because I would find it very difficult to sustain myself. I don't know what to do. I often think, suppose someone imprisoned me in here, I wouldn't live very long. I'd get plenty of water, but I might catch some crayfish.
Yeah.
Crayfish in the dam.
Eat some frogs.
Yeah, but you try and catch a frog.
That's right. I don't know. How did the Aborigines catch them?
Well, I don't know whether they did eat them. I wouldn't know. So there is the...
I think they would often... the women would dig down for them with their digging sticks in summer when they're estivating. What is the sheen on the water here?
Oh, that is an oily substance which is not pollution, it's natural oily material that comes from diatoms and other organisms that live in the water.
Right, so I've seen a huge coat, a really thick coating of it on top of some swamps called the Spectacles, south of Fremantle. So yes, some people say it's oil, but I didn't think it was oil.
No.
So So your forest management, has that just been hands off? Apart from the trails?
Yes. The trails have cleared about 2% of the whole forest area.
Yeah.
And what I've got in return, of course, is a system which, where I can look at all the plants and do a lot of study. I can also take people for a walk. If you crash through that, every animal and plant has gone. Every animal is gone.
It's gone.
So, you see. So if you come along here, and you see a bandicoot on the trail, or I think it is. We haven't seen him here today. He's been noisy.
But yeah, some forestry people say forests need to be managed. They don't, do they? They can. They've managed themselves for millions of years.
Foresters have, in my opinion, foresters have developed a very perverted view of what forests are about. They say that carry will not regenerate on its own, that you have to clear, fell and burn and then plant trees. Well, maybe if you want a very good forest, but nature does it on its own, as we'll see in a moment. Well, I have a carry forest in the making up here. I'll explain it to you.
It's a nice view of this, the top of the swamp, canopy of the tea trees.
The idea that you have an elevated view here.
Yeah, so I guess when the group settlers arrived, it must have been all like this.
Very much like this. Oh, well, no, because it would be the big forest, because they hadn't cut down to the trees.
Yeah.
So it would have looked very different. The trees would have been at least 5 steps size. There's a few stags of things that are up the top.
Yep. Does Kerry extend much further east than Denmark, or is it apart from Barongaroks?
Into the Barongaroks.
But that's an outlying stand, isn't it?
And I think there's another lot a bit even further east. And they're all genetically different. They're little isolated populations which have the genetic studies show that they're long separated from the original population, which of course would be around Manjimup, Pemberton and so on.